Hey, this is Wildcat from Florida. Hey, I was just wondering, why don't you guys do the same concept that you did with the Left 4 Dead podcast, but you use a demigod song, but you use demigod instead, and record, obviously record the song.
This week on a very special PC Gamer podcast, we're playing Demigod. While we slug it out in Gas Power Games' multi-deity arena, PC Gamer alum and Maximum PC online editor Norman Chan joins us to chat about today's Team Fortress 2 double class update.
Hello.
We'll also play back some excellent listener questions and comments from last week's podcast about what underrated games you have a soft spot for and append our playlists. To quote Demigod, it has begun. Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode number 176 for Thursday, May 21st. I'm PC Gamer Associate Editor Evan Lotte, and joining me today are the following God wannabes. Josh Augustine playing as Oak.
Oh yeah.
We also have the aforementioned Norman Unclean Beast from the East, Chan.
Was that a racial comment?
Absolutely not. And as always, Andy, whatever character you are, Bauman.
I think that the Queen of Thorns is looking pretty good.
Okay.
But I don't really know. Good. What do you guys think? As this is my first time playing, of course. So,
I'd probably say an assassin character would work well for your first time. Is that correct, guys?
So Regulus, he looks pretty cool.
Regulus is a good option. He's kind of a sniper. Type role.
Support character, yeah. Go ahead. All right. Play Regulus.
Done. Ready.
All right. Let's switch one of our AI off Regulus then. So, we're making another attempt at an in-game podcast for you guys. Thought it'd be a fun way. And this is definitely being an arena-based, team-based game. It's a nice space to talk about our week of news and topics. We'd normally play against Nightmare AI, but we want to sort of have some attention toward those topics. So.
Plus, I'm scared. Right. So.
Of course, Andy's still adjusting. All right, if you haven't played Demigod or the original Warcraft 3 Defense of the Ancients mod that this game is based off of, sort of a spiritual successor to, that's probably the better way of stating it. The controls are similar to a dungeon crawler in RTS in that you're controlling one character and you're buying items and you have melee abilities and spells. But the mechanics are a little bit similar to like control point shooters and whatnot, and those types of games where you're capturing these flags. It's really a pretty unique genre, I'd say. It's been enjoyable. Most of us have kind of, me, Norm, and Will from MaxPC and Dan Stapleton have kind of switched over to it from our other multiplayer games that we usually play at night.
So for people who aren't, they obviously can't see the game, you want to explain what the map is that we're playing, what the characters we're playing?
Yeah. So we're on Cataract. It's designed as a 4-on-4 map. And it's
3-on-3.
3-on-3? Okay. Well, it's symmetrical, and there's basically three lanes running up the map, and there's three flags in the middle, and capturing those, in addition to granting different bonuses like a temporary experience boost or a boost to your maximum mana or health, owning these flags over time gives you what's called war score. And the more war score you have, the more you can basically purchase upgrades for your citadel, which is your base. And those upgrades can range from upgrading the amount of money you get per second, per minute, upgrading the damage and life of your minions, getting new minions. So again, the idea is like managing this war of attrition alongside trying to just survive and take down the enemy demigods and capture flags. So you're juggling a lot of stuff at once, and yeah. How you doing over there, Andy? It's your first time.
Yeah, I'm kind of just, clicking around.
Okay.
Not really sure what... Oh, it looks like I just fell.
All right. So probably... Okay, I see Norm has his flag on the right side locked. Meaning nobody can capture it for 45 seconds. But really one of the most important skills in Demigod is knowing when to run away and being ready to run away at pretty much all times. There are a few characters that move faster than others and that have ranged abilities and abilities that activate under certain conditions. So you really need to be ready to get back to base where you can heal up and buy new items and regroup with your teammates.
So yeah, what's the difference between a general and an assassin?
Yeah, so essentially there's 8 demigods total, and they're set in 2 different groups, assassins and generals. The generals are a little bit weaker in most cases in one-on-one situations than the assassins, but they can control additional minions, and these minions can be siege minions that help you destroy towers. They can be sort of melee minions. They can be healing minions. But those minions are sort of weaker, and they're stronger than the normal minions that run about the map, but you're sort of put in a position where you have to manage them as well.
So the idea is that you can't control the minions, the group minions directly. They just walk along a predefined path and fight whatever comes in across their path. But the idea is you want to eventually upgrade your minions so they're strong enough to destroy the enemy defenses. There are a bunch of towers set up around the map. And it really is playing for the long haul.
Yep.
To get to their citadel.
All right. Moose Sudden is a little weak. It's 400 HP. All right. Yeah, in the early levels, those defense towers, Andy, are really pretty durable and pretty tough.
Yeah, but I got wings, man.
You do have wings. That's that's admirable. You lock this tower. Yeah, I'll lock this flag.
So, Andy, when you said you had wings, your own demigod has abilities that you can upgrade?
Yeah. I started like looking down the pathways of sort of Diablo-style traits and stuff that you can buy with your level up points and stuff.
Yeah.
Now I'm running away.
I think.
Yeah. And one of the things I like best about Demigod is how distinct the characters are, not only in terms of just how they look and feel, but their ability trees are very unusual. I mean, they're not really in a conventional sense where you play an RPG and like, okay, this character is clearly a mage. This one is clearly like a paladin class or a tank. The rook, for example, which Josh just killed, if I'm not mistaken, he's sort of this towering, he looks like a giant castle with legs, basically. But one of his main abilities is he can lay down these miniature defense towers and link them together with existing ones. So he's kind of a defensive class, but he can have different roles. So there's a lot of flexibility within demigods themselves that's interesting and appealing, I think. All right.
Oh, the Arab has stunned me on the right side, so I could not lock the flag. I have to run.
Yeah, I had to abandon left side, too.
Right, I'm coming to help you out. Norm already has 3 kills. That's pretty good.
If you want to go after Erebus, I just spit on him.
I'll fire
him. Oh, there
nice
it goes.
One.
It's kind of like Unreal Tournament. You're on a rampage.
Exactly.
Yes, kill streaks do matter.
It does throw that stuff out there. It's nice to have an announcer. Yeah, again, for attacking these defense towers, I've found it's most useful to let your minions get in first and then follow up with an attack on them, because the tower will focus on them, and you can get a few hits in yourself. I'm going to attempt that here on the right side. Now one of their demigods teleported in.
Oh, I was foolish. I got greedy.
But again, like this, there's some really unique, interesting mechanics at work here. I mean, as someone that mostly plays shooters, it's refreshing to see this complexity. But it's still like, I mean, on the surface, like visually, it's kind of hard to understand what's going on because the characters aren't really familiar. But teleportation, for example, you can buy these teleportation scrolls back at your base at the item shop, and in most cases, that's the best means of getting away from an encounter that you need to get away from, or teleporting into assist an ally, but there's a casting time associated with it. You can be stunned and that can prevent you from teleporting. So there's a lot of nuance in all the characters and the mechanics that I've been really enjoying.
Yeah, they're really diverse. I've kind of mostly been playing Oak, but every now and then, like, I'll try, you know, the Torchbearer, something like that, and it feels almost like a completely different game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's really good because, I mean, this sort of game, it's easy to get kind of burned out fast, but all you have to do is switch to a new demigod, and, I mean, it's totally new again.
Well, Josh, you don't get burned out if you keep on winning.
That's true. But can't win every time.
And
don't you believe in a no-lose scenario?
All right, we're hitting Rook pretty hard here.
It's set in the next.
Nice job. But yeah, Josh, and speaking of new demigods, so Brad Wardell of Stardock, which is Demigods publisher, announced in a blog post earlier this week that we'd be seeing, which we sort of already knew this, we don't really have any more details, but that two new demigods are in development for the game. I mean, is there any certain role or playing type that you'd like to see these characters fulfill, guys, that's missing?
Well, if you look at the different, you know, obviously one's probably in general, one's assassin.
Yeah.
And the assassins are typically, you know, melee. You have the rook and the beast. I could see maybe another torchbearer-like assassin.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I could see the general, because I think all the generals are melee, so I could definitely see a ranged general.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Queen is sort of ranged, but...
I wouldn't mind seeing a character that like deploys an item, or I mean Regulus is sort of the only demigod that has an ability that like his mines, for example, he throws down these mines that become invisible, and you can sort of lure other demigods into them to deal extra damage. I'd like to see a little bit more of that. I like the idea of putting things on the battlefield for whatever reason.
Yeah, Erebus is kind of a stealth class, but it would be interesting to see kind of a more stealth class that could kind of go around stealth, then kind of pop out where he needed to.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sudden's about to bite it. Nice. Okay, let's cap that left side flag.
Yep.
All right.
I'm going bottom left.
Very good. So a lot has been made about demigods' connection issues post-launch. I mean, some of that is the fact that GameStop essentially released the game early. They broke the street date. And, you know, again, because Demigod didn't have any DRM attached to it or copy protection, Stardock was essentially dealing with thousands of new connections before they really even had their servers fully set up to support.
Well, you want to explain the way Demigod runs its servers. It's not a traditional... Right. You know, one server, it's peer-to-peer, yeah. But there are NAT servers that every player needs to connect to, whether you're a legitimate player or not. And those are servers that were hammered. Plus, there were some, Brad Wardell admits there were some poor design decisions when they originally designed the architecture for multiplayer.
Yeah, it's all client-based, and I mean, one of the faults that Brad mentions in his write-up in the blog in Stardock is they really relied on sort of third-party code for a lot of their stuff. The character animations are based in that. The cutscenes are based in that. And again, their netcode is based in that. So it made it hard for them to adjust and really fix what was a kind of a fundamental problem with their coding situation. And, you know, initially, because it is and continues to be client-to-client based, that meant that the more people you're trying to play with, you know, if you're trying to get a 5-on-5 game, it was exponentially more difficult to do so because there's more connections happening there. But there have been a few patches, and I can't remember when the most recent one was, but at least anecdotally, it's fixed most of our problems. We've haven't had too many issues connecting.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, guys.
No, it's been great.
Most of the problems have been fixed.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, I had stopped playing for about 2 weeks, and I came back, and there's like 3 patches to download. But ever since then, I mean, I haven't had any problems. So
that's good news. All right. So speaking of important updates, we've got another one coming out today that is much anticipated among shooter fans. The double Team Fortress 2 class update for the Scout and Spy. So we've learned over the past week or so, it was actually funny. I mean, some people had sort of speculated on this or suggested this develop, maybe is a better way of putting it, that a Spy update would be best represented by like cloaking it or disguising it as one class's update and having it suddenly be revealed. And that's kind of
exactly what, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And that it was kind of a funny thing for us to see that come true. But again, the Sniper and the Spy will both be updated today. We got to look at their items. The Sniper's getting a shield that protects him from backstabbing spies, and he's getting a bow and arrow, essentially, that sort of encourages him to attack at medium range.
And a jar of piss.
And a jar and Jirati, the jar-based
Can't forget that.
Wasn't that actually a joke update that turned out to be real?
It was. It was the April Fool's announcement that they had. But for whatever reason, they decided to roll it in as a real thing. And essentially what it's going to do is, first of all, can put out friendly players that are on fire, so you can use it conceivably as a grenade. We're recording this. Hasn't been released yet. But you can use it to put out players that are on fire, but also when used on enemies, they'll take 35% more damage for a period of time, I guess.
And then it's also specifically anti-spy, because spies can't cloak.
That's right. And it can be removed by jumping in water, of course.
But we'll scar them for life.
Of course. And the day before that, on Wednesday, we got to look at on Tuesday, we got to look at the Ambassador, which is sort of a hand cannon-style pistol for the spy.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the pistol. Pistols are always my favorite weapons in any sort of shooter game. And Team Fortress 2 just really hasn't had a very decent selection of pistols. Like, the Engineer and the Scouts have them, but they just don't feel right. And so
they
every now and then...
quickly. This one's more of a Magnum.
Yeah. Every now and then I'll log into the Spy just to use his pistol. So I'm really excited to see what the new upgrade, how that plays out.
Can someone buy money?
Yeah, I just bought money, and I bought priests.
Yeah, the one thing I've kind of noticed, I don't know if they did this intentionally, but the sniper updates are anti-spy, and the spy is kind of anti-sniper. And so by packaging them together, maybe the kind of influx of the updated classes on servers won't be as big of a deal, because they're kind of bound.
Well, they're natural rivals.
Yeah. So I'm thinking you won't see the problem on servers where pyros, you know, just dominated the servers. Because even if spies and snipers are the two classes dominating the server, it's kind of a decent balance to have a bunch of them against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're right. And for one thing, it means that when it releases today, players won't only be playing one class.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd imagine there's going to be some interesting feeling out periods like there are with the other class updates.
They've released charts showing the distribution of classes after updates. And it, you know, it skews toward whatever update was released pretty significantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just saying that, I mean, normally like when the heavy update and the scout update came out, you almost weren't playing normal games because everybody was trying to unlock stuff and get used to the new mechanics. So hopefully it'd be a little bit more balanced, if not probably longer games, if everybody's playing at a distance and trying to infiltrate behind people. Yeah, I mean, with the Ambassador, one of the new watches, I forget the name of it, might be the Cloak and Dagger, that allows the spy to essentially feign death, which was an ability in the original TFC that I liked. I emailed Robin Walker of the TF2 team earlier this week, and he basically said to me that he's expecting spy characters that fight a little bit more in the open, that use the new watches to sort of... try and find like engineers and other characters on their own and kill them and sort of hopefully draw their allies to that position. But they'll be either standing still and cloaked or feigning death. And then, again, the Ambassador allows them to sort of, you know, fight in front of their enemies too, which is refreshing, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice change. They do such a good job of finding the updates that really expand the class and give it new life.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff that I never even would have thought of to do. They do an excellent job. I would like to note, though, that in the spy achievements that they announced on the bottom, out of 34 achievements, there are 28 pictures of knives.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just thought it was funny because they all look so similar. So, yeah, there are 28 pictures of knives on their in their different achievements.
Well, thanks for counting those out for us, Josh.
It's kind of a slow morning, if you couldn't tell.
It was. Yeah, we're knee-deep in week four over here. I don't know about you guys at MaxPC, Norm.
We're 1 week behind, so.
You're managing a pretty exciting photo shoot today.
Yeah. We'll always have some time for some Demigod.
So coming back to Demigod, let me ask you guys some questions about it.
Yeah, please
do. We're kind of just like fighting in the... It's definitely... It feels like a paintball map or something that you play, you know? Like, everything's... There's certain ways to get everywhere, but we're fighting mostly like in choke points, the same the same spot every time. And it doesn't seem
That's for this map. Yes.
Okay. And it seems like we're doing well, but like, are we... progressing, or are we winning? Like, what's
look at where we are in terms of upgrades. You earn a lot of money when you kill other demigods.
Okay.
So the more money you have, the more upgrades you can buy. If you look at their front line, you know, we're holding the middle flags, which gives us war score. Okay. And if you press tab, you can see we have 5,000 war score and they have 3,000, which means we can buy level 7 upgrades and they can only buy level 5. So once you reach the end game, we'll have more money, higher war score. You can buy things like giants and catapults, which will really decimate their defenses and let us reach their citadel.
And that's really the position we're at right now, where we almost definitely have an edge in money, and we want to invest that in getting the next type of of minions that they don't have yet. We can see that they both have priests, which are sort of the bulky guys that sit at the back and cast spells or cast healing.
Okay, and, so that's one of the things you can upgrade is like the dudes that just run around automatically.
Right.
Okay.
Would somebody get kicked?
Oh, and the game has been frozen for me.
Yeah, me too.
Uh-oh. Unfortunate.
It is.
Lots of... Oh, no, it's back.
Cool.
Oh, okay.
Here we go. Okay. That's better. That scared me. All right. So yeah, in the top left corner, I've just captured one of the enemy portal flags, which is... probably something you want to wait to do until you really have the advantage in minions where you can really punish them and get in their base and give them a distraction. But in this case, I've been able to sort of turn one of their... the portals are what turn out new minion types or bring in fresh minions and reinforcements. So by grabbing one of theirs, I not only diminish their forces in the field, but give them something new to deal with that's pretty much on their footstep. You're not doing too bad, Annie. You're level 8.
Yeah, this character is pretty good. He has this strong sniper shot that I've been taking really good pot shots at the other demigods, and it really damages them heavily. So,
excellent. All right, does anybody have money for angels?
Possibly.
Have a ton because I haven't spent anything.
All right, so if you click...
You should buy armor and stuff.
So what do I...
Yeah.
So I go to the artifact shop.
No, you go back home next to our health crystal.
Okay.
There's a little shop there, item shop. And then there are different categories for items you can buy to boost your attributes. Gloves, hats.
Yeah, and actually those items don't work like a traditional RPG like slot system where you have a helmet slot and a armor slot, for example. You can have
helmets.
Yeah. You can have 5 hats if you want.
Okay.
Different hats, though.
Humorous and fantastic.
Okay.
Although it doesn't actually show you the hats.
Oh, yeah. Let's get some breastplates.
I just kind of layer those on there. Yeah, definitely. More is better. So there's another pretty exciting announcement for me. I don't know if you guys have played Xenoclash, but this is a pretty quickly announced sequel. Ace Team, the developer of Xenoclash out of Chile, announced that we're going to be seeing a Xenoclash 2 earlier this week. And, you know, for an independent developer, they've told me that only about 10 people worked on the original Xenoclash.
Wow, really?
Yeah. They wouldn't give me any specific sales numbers, but they've told us that we're to expect a sort of a more open-ended and larger universe kind of game. Not exactly more of the same. And that they're going to, I mean, they've always planned to continue to support the original with new DLC. They're going to be adding some of the challenge mode levels that are sort of the the only content outside of the single player. I'm buying Angels, by the way. But it was just really exciting. I mean, we reviewed the game in our July issue, got 84%. And I mean, the thing I loved about it was there's such, I mean, whether you're there for the unique setting and how interesting the world was and the characters and the story, or if you were just there to punch things and punch these ridiculous looking creatures in the face, which is totally acceptable, it really provided that kind of like really exciting context, but pretty impressive and, dare I say, innovative first-person combat at the same time. All right, we're making good progress here. This is great.
Yeah, this... So, and then where did you buy the angels, like you were saying? What does that work?
Right, so you buy them from the Citadel, and once they're purchased, they essentially just roll out of the portals at intervals with the rest of your minions.
Yeah.
So we've actually captured the flag right in front of their base, which is a really important one. It gives plus 30% reinforcement damage and health. So that's kind of a double whammy for us and them. Actually, we didn't mention this, Andy, but the main objective is to destroy their citadel.
I kind of got that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that was self-explanatory. All right. Well, Andy, I'm not sure if you're... knee deep in enemies right now.
But we
did get some pretty yeah, we got
this
some
good,
outstanding questions from last week. We talked about gameplay moments that felt emotional to us and sort of games that were underrated or underscored by media outlets that we have a fond attachments for, and I just really appreciate you guys sending in some great comments and questions. So fire away, Andy, when ready. We'll continue to attack their base.
Give them hell for me while I do the questions. All right. Here we go.
Hey, PC Gamer. This is Harrison from Door County, Wisconsin. I'm following up with your conversation from last week's podcast about games that are terribly fun to play, but aren't that great. One of my favorite games of all time was Battlefield Vietnam. Nothing was that special about it. It was basically a mod for Battlefield 1942, but I put so many hours into that game, it's ridiculous. Why I think I loved it so much was that it was a different setting for once. I had never been able to wander the open jungles of Vietnam before in a video game. This brings me to my next question. Vietnam games have always sucked in the past, except for Battlefield Vietnam, of course. Why do you think this is? I partly think this because the technical limitations of the past prevented the creation of open-world jungles that defined the Vietnam War. But now I believe an excellent Vietnam game could be made. Using Crysis as an example, it has the jungles, it has the open worlds. I want to see a really good Vietnam game made in the future, preferably not in the Shell Shock series. What do you guys think about a Vietnam game?
Well, first of all, GG, guys. We successfully defeated the forces of darkness.
Well done.
Take that, darkness.
That's right.
Well done, Josh. 160 favorite points.
Yeah.
Most kills, highest
tied
level.
With kills. It's good.
Yeah. Kills, damage, gold, kill streak, structures, and reinforcements awards for Josh.
I also didn't talk very much, so bounces out.
That's quite fine. So again, Vietnam games, I can't really remember a good one I've played, like you said. Did you play Battlefield Vietnam, Norm?
I actually did the review for Gamer. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was a good complement to 1942. It was no Battlefield 2. The foliage was great, but like with Battlefield 1942, one of the problems was that, you know, the foliage really was client-side. And, you know, if you could hide on top of a hill, you know, underneath tall grass, sure, it looked cool, but if someone was playing with the lowest settings on a computer, they could see you. They wouldn't see the foliage, or if they went far enough away. That's really been a technical limitation, mm-hmm. For multiplayer games at least. Just the Vietnam setting is really neat. There are a lot of, you know, the jungle stuff, of course, you can see Crysis now, but there have been other Vietnam shooters where, they had like tunnels, like tunneling was a big factor. And obviously with landmines and a lot of guerrilla warfare stuff. I'd like to see a really strong Vietnam single player game. But for multiplayer, I'll stick with Battlefield 2.
Sounds good, and there's lots of upcoming iterations on the Battlefield series coming up from EA and DICE. Next question, Andy. Oh, yeah, by the way, do we want to hop back in another lobby, guys? Try another game. Do you have time, Norm?
I actually do not, unfortunately. Although it was very fun, I'm glad I got my demigod fixed for this afternoon.
Well, we are too. Yeah, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. Really appreciate it.
And, okay, of course.
Definitely let you know if we're having another demicast again.
All right. Take it easy, guys.
Take care, Norm. Thanks again.
Bye.
All right. Let's hop back in the lobby, Josh. Yeah, I see you're hosting already.
Yep.
While Andy fires up another question.
Hey, this is Wildcat from Florida. Hey, I was just wondering, why don't you guys do the same concept that you did with the Left 4 Dead podcast, but you use a demigod?
Oops, I'm going to save that one. At the beginning.
That's a genius idea. Why didn't we think of that? Podcast.
This is Durf McWoo-woo from beautiful Sandy, Oregon, in the foothills of Mount Hood, where we can ski all year long. Hey, I just wanted to mention my emotional moments, and they were back a long time ago. It was Wing Commander. The first one when you found out that Hobbs was a traitor, and the second one was when you found out that your girlfriend was dead. I think the first one was in Wing Commander 3, and the second one was in Wing Commander 4. Anyways, those got me a long time. That was a day when I played. Excuse me, when I play on Team Fortress 2, it's amazing. When you light people on fire, God, the emotion. Anyways, thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
I actually get a little bit more emotional when I air blast people like an Uber in Team Fortress 2 in terms of the pyro. Anyway.
I don't really remember Wing Commander that well. I was young. But
I think... What he's talking about, and at least part of it, you can definitely credit the fact that Wing Commander was one of the first games that tried to be movie-like on the PC. I mean, really made a genuine effort at it with actors like John Rhys Davies and Mark Hamill, of course, and Malcolm McDowell, and tons of green screen, huge budget. So I'd like to think part of that, that fond memory that he just shared, is a credit to Wing Commander in that sense. Thanks for sharing that moment, guys. Let's see. Oh, Andy's pinging 0. There he is. Okay.
Hi, PC Gamer. This is Steven. As a response to your topic last week about games that wouldn't score very well but that are very fun, I would like to add Battlefield 2142. It's an extremely fun game, and it's also very addicting because it has lots of achievements and unlocks and weapons. But the graphics aren't that great, and not many people still play it. I love the magazine, love the podcast. Thanks.
Yeah, it's like another one of those in-betweeny Battlefield games that... like, I love the base ones, like 1942 and Battlefield 2. I never really got around to migrating to the in-between ones, but... I sort of wanted to give it a shot. I just never got around to it.
Yeah. That's fun. 2142.
I remember seeing it at, I think it was E3 06, if that sounds right. And, being just very intrigued by the idea of mechs and those kind of vehicles that I think were in the game that were shown there. I wish we had Andy Salisbury on today. He probably has more experience than all of us in 2142.
Or at least his dad does.
His dad does, that's right.
All right, one last question here.
Yep.
Hi, this is David from Stockholm, Sweden. Speaking of games that might not have been that good but I still enjoyed is Dreamfall, the sequel to The Longest Journey. It was a good game, but not if you compare it to The Longest Journey. I didn't like what they did with the story, but it was really fun to revisit some of the places from the old game. Like Venice and the Border House, to see what happened to that after this so-called collapse. And also to meet some of the old characters, like April and, of course, Crow. Keep up the awesome work with the podcast. Bye.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. There's a lot of adventure games aren't very well done. It's a lot of kind of pixel hunting, and it takes really clever writing to me to make an adventure game really interesting, but I still just love them for the story. Even if it's not a very great game, I love a good story, and so I'll play through most kind of average adventure games.
Certainly, I mean, both Longest Journey games are, I mean, they're almost trying to be books. It's funny for our most recent game club for our August issue, which if you missed it, it's a new section that we're sort of using to cover retro games, where we sort of have a dialogue about a retro game and go back and forth about how we felt about it and replay it. And the Longest Journey is the one we're doing for our August issue. Anyway.
Cool. Yeah. Like Dreamfall, he summed it up pretty much exactly how I feel. It was such a great experience to revisit everything, even though the game itself might have been totally, like, almost teetering on bad. Overall experience was really fun, especially since how in love I am with the characters and the story of Longest Journey.
Absolutely. I think the thing I liked about Longest Journey was, I mean, it wasn't the type of adventure game where there were necessarily like roadblocks in place as puzzles to prevent you from getting further in the game. You'd sort of, I mean, you could still explore the game and talk to characters and have dialogue trees. It was much more about the ambiance and the world itself than creating a context in which to deliver puzzles, if that makes sense.
Certainly, yeah. Okay. That's all we got for questions.
All right, well, we're still making progress here. How are you doing, Andy?
It's good. I'm playing as the Rook this time.
Yeah, you frightened me when you came up behind me. I didn't realize you were playing as the Rook, and so I thought I'd been flanked. So I'm glad that was you.
So I forget the name of this map, but it's the one that looks like giant snakes being held by giant concrete men. And I guess it's technically symmetrical, but it sort of plays like an asymmetrical map in that the routes curve a lot more. And there's sort of two flags in the middle for that grant a gold boost if you capture them. There's two flags at the side that can be used for restoring your life and health. So those are sort of base areas in the middle if you're able to hold those life crystal flags. I know somebody also sent in a question about Killing Floor as an underrated game that they've been playing lately, and having just finished reviewing it, that's something I can agree with completely. You'll see the review in our August issue, but it's definitely a game that I sort of feel like it represents the best of what a budget game should do or can do, in that, like, if you pick it up on an impulse purchase, it really kind of meets your expectations. We've talked about it a lot over the past couple of weeks, I think, but again, it's sort of a, I mean, the mechanics and the graphics are still sort of set in the 2002 era of games, but it still manages to kind of pull out some of the best of that era, in that there's tons of gore, there's like this heavy metal soundtrack, there's six-player co-op, all the weapons are really expressive in their animations. I've really been enjoying it just as, and I don't know, sort of an alternative to Counter-Strike, which is sort of the other pick-up-and-play shooter I've used over the past few months. It actually really discouraged people from calling it Left 4 Dead-like, just because there's really no distinct mechanics in place to justify that description. I mean, there's no smoker to pull you out of areas. There's no, I mean, if your ally goes down, which they don't actually get incapacitated, you can't pick them up and things like that. So it's a much more basic, straightforward kind of game. But other than that, I've been looking to get back into Fallout for a second playthrough, and The Longest Journey, which we visited last week. How about yourself, Josh?
I've been playing a lot of Champions Online with Dan that I am really excited about. We've been playing for our, we have a nice preview coming out in the August issue. It's a lot of fun. It has a lot of new additions and takes a lot of stuff that works well from other MMOs. And if nothing else, it is awesome to swing around like Spider-Man, shooting down lightning bolts on enemy tanks.
So, did you actually have a chance to try out the Nemesis system?
I did not, no. Dan, okay. I know, tried that. It took him a while to find the NPC to do it, and I just didn't really have the patience to go searching for him.
Yeah.
Because it is still in beta, so some of the NPCs are kind of in the wrong place every now and then, and so, but... I mean, the Nemesis system looks great. I mean, it's a really unique thing. They do a really good job of kind of not making it just like WoW or Warcraft with tights and capes. They really do add gameplay features to make it do feel very superhero-y. And,
great. Yeah. And other than the character customization and the travel powers, what's your favorite aspect of it, either in terms of like the story or a character or gameplay mechanics?
Oh... That is tough. I would have to say probably the ability to basically create your own class. They have like frameworks, which is basically, you know, like using a blade, having lightning, telekinesis, that sort of stuff. And you choose one of those, and that's how you get your first two abilities. But after that, you can spend points as you level in any of the trees. So you can combine, you know, a martial artist, you know, who has, you know, little attack toys that follow him around and shoot stuff, but then he also can shoot lightning out of his hands. And so just the ability to create your own class. And so you can basically draw any superhero you want on page, invent a superhero, draw it on paper with anything you can imagine. And I can almost guarantee that you can pretty much create that character exactly how you want in Champions Online. So just the ability to let your kind of imagination run wild is I'm definitely enjoying that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. In a personal sense, like I like comic books, I like superheroes, but I don't consider myself a hardcore comic book fan in the sense that, I mean, I'll pick up a graphic novel here and there, but I don't really understand a lot of the storylines or the history as much as I like. So it's sort of like a clean slate for me, or in that I can experience this existing universe for the first time, sort of at my own pace, and like you said, create my own story. So that's definitely appealing. Andy Bauman, other than this extraordinary round of Demigod, we have 2 kills and 1 assist, or I'm sorry, 1 kill and 1 assist.
Yeah, I think I'll be trying this game out more often. Although it looks
like
it kind of just messed up on my computer for some reason. I don't know why. So that's why I'm not moving around. But other than this game, I've been playing Peggle still. I only have 2 more challenges left for Peggle Knights. The last.
Now, isn't that where you were last week?
No, I had 3 more. So I beat the 750,000 in 1 turn.
How do you feel about Plants vs. Zombies? Do you find that kind of as addicting? Or
I haven't. I'm going to wait to totally get into it. I played it a little bit, and it's just super fun. So I need to wait a little bit when I'm done with Peggle. Then
got to focus on Peggle.
Yeah, because these last challenges just take time. As I said, just got to sit there and grind through it. And so, also, I've been playing Far Cry 2 and Left 4 Dead.
How do you think you're going to celebrate when you finally become a Peggle Master and Peggle Knights?
Usually how I celebrate whenever I do something really awesome in gaming, I just jump around and run around and make noise and scare my cat.
All right. Good plan.
That sounds like the appropriate response.
Yeah.
All right, so what do you think? Should we try and finish up this game before we stop, or should we just cut it off now?
I'm kind of at a point where I can't play. I don't know how.
Oh, really? Are you frozen?
Oh, I'm frozen, too.
Oh, wait, something. I think I exited the game on accident.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's fine. All right, so we'll edit this part, and that'll just be the closing, I guess.
I forgot to turn the fan on my video card, so it's overheating.
Oh,
yikes!
No biggie.
All right, I'll just drum up an outro real quick.
Okay.
All right, so thanks again, guys, for your excellent questions and comments sent into our podcast this week. If you'd like to submit another, just send us an MP3 email to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can give us a telephone call. You'll have to keep it under 60 seconds, but the number is 877-404-1337, extension 724. And please feel free to let us know if you like these video podcasts or in-game podcasts. sort of something new for us. We're still trying to figure out the logistics of, and but we want to keep the podcast entertaining for you guys and keep it fun. And we like this idea of being in a game as a context or a space for simulating some discussion. So yeah, I look forward to your guys' comments on that too. On behalf of Andy Bauman and Norman Chan from Maximum PC, Josh Augustine, I'm Evan Lotti, signing off. We'll see you guys next week. Take care. Thanks.
Bye.